Good morning, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of The Morning Show. I'm your host, Phil Huff, and we're getting some squeaking here in the room. So, Jack, if you're listening, text me and tell me what I can do with the squeaking. Otherwise, it's a fine morning outside, a little fog. We're going to talk about the weather here, and then we have on Chris Bilbrey, director from the Idaho Panhandle Avalanche Center, and we're going to be talking about avalanches and how to prevent them and how to predict them and what to do in the backcountry so that we can avoid them. That's the main thing. Today, we have a chance of rain and snow at 30%. It's going to hit a high of 39 degrees. I think we're almost there. Tonight, low of 30, 90% chance of rain, then snow. So we have precipitation in the Forsytes. Hopefully the mountains are going to be getting more. I think we're going to get a firsthand account of what the mountains look like here in just a moment. Wednesday, we have rain likely. Thanksgiving Day for that turkey trot, 90% chance of rain, but a high near 40. So put on layers, including that outer shell. Thursday night drops to freezing. Friday, it's looking like mixed temperatures, highs in the 40s, high 30s and 40s in the day, lows in the 20s at night. It's got that rain snow thing going on. That's all down low, probably higher up. All that moisture is going to be a bit colder and falling down as the white stuff. So with nothing further to do with the weather, we're going to move on to the topic and guest this morning. Again, I mentioned Chris Bilbrey from the Idaho Panhandle Avalanche Center. Chris was on about this time last year. Yeah, tell us a little bit more about yourself, Chris.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Phil, for having me this morning. It's great to be here with you guys and talk about winter.
Yeah, winter and all things associated in the outdoors with winter. I'd like to get a little deeper dive into your background and such, but you did mention to me just before the show you were out yesterday up high. How are things looking? That's what we want to know.
Yeah, in the industry, we refer to things as either low tide or high tide, similar to the ocean. Yep. High tide is midwinter, great coverage, great access. Right now, it's pretty low tide. You got to be ambitious, want to travel up through the non-snow conditions at lower elevations, you know, get through the bush. But once you get around 5,000, 5,500 feet, our snowpack is slowly evolving, not at the fast pace it started last year. Thanks in part to a lot of rain here in November after a cold start in October. But generally 2-3 feet. Sits mm-hmm. at our upper elevations, and we're excited to see it and excited to have a product to work in.
So we're putting down a reasonably good base?
Yeah, it's kind of a tale of two cities. A lot of snow in October, cold temperatures, and then a bunch of rain in November. Saturated the snowpack and has since refrozen, so what's sitting on the ground is a good base. Now, we know that things near the surface can evolve and change and form weak layers quickly, and we're already seeing evidence of that. Now we got some new snow falling on top, so it's the big question of, will the faceting get worse before mm-hmm. those layers get buried deeper?
So we're going to get into more technical stuff about the snow layers and what all that means for the winter in a few moments. Tell our listeners a little bit about your background, how you came to do avalanche work and came to find yourself as the director of the Panhandle Avalanche Center.
Yeah, sure. Well, my journey in this industry profession started back in 2002. I worked as a professional ski patroller in Colorado for 11 seasons, had a stint working as a TA for a snow dynamics class at Fort Lewis College, where I went to college. And that kind of got the grad school itch. My wife and I moved to Bozeman, Montana, and I studied snow and avalanches at Montana State. And then started working as a public forecaster in 2017 with our friends over in the Flathead Avalanche Center over in northwest Montana. And then journeys went back to Colorado, where I worked for 6 seasons with the Colorado Avalanche Information Center down in the San Juans. And then this opportunity here with IPAC came about in 2024, and yeah, was looking for that next professional drive, and this has been, it's been a good change for me professionally, and it's been a fun project to work on helping grow the center and move it forward in the positive direction that I think many people in the community wanted to see. So here we are.
Here we are in North Idaho, and different than the Flathead, different than Colorado. From your perspective with what you do with forecasting avalanches, tell us a little bit about those differences.
Yeah, the rain's wetter here than it is in the Flathead and definitely in Colorado. You know, it's very rare to get rain on the snow in Colorado. So that has been a new challenge for me, understanding the impacts of rain and weak layers and crust and how that shapes the avalanche danger and the problems that we talk about in our forecast. So it's a new avalanche, it's a new snow climate, new avalanche climate. It's all relatively, it's the same stuff, just a different interpretation of what's going on. But it's been a good challenge to kind of learn the nuances here compared to other places I've worked. The terrain here is much different too. Like, we don't have as high of peaks as we do in other places in the Rockies, but the mountains here are very steep. And so there's micro terrain traps, micro terrain features that are just littered throughout the landscape and at all elevation bands that can make the travel challenging here. And you can see why there's a need for an avalanche center, because the terrain can be very complex, even though it doesn't look like big and gnarly like the Tetons or something like that.
Yeah, but when the snow goes and you're at the bottom of that slide,
it's all the same.
Yeah. So this is a good segue into the center. Tell us about the center, what operates it, what it does.
Yeah, so the Idaho Panhandle Avalanche Center is actually a Forest Service program. We fall under the overarching Avalanche Education and Information Program, which is a program of the Forest Service. It's been around since the 1950s. All 14 Forest Service affiliated Type 1 avalanche centers, as well as the National Avalanche Center, fall under the Avalanche Education and Information Program. So we're heavily vested and have long roots as an industry with the Forest Service. IPAC has been around since the mid-80s, has had a lot of positive growth, a few steps back, but over its time has been a good resource for the public. As growing demand and backcountry use has grown, the center has needed to adapt to that and grow as well. We couldn't have the positive growth that we do without our friends group, the Friends of the Idaho Panhandle Avalanche Center, which we are really one big happy family. They're our friends group that helps drive avalanche safety and education throughout our communities, but then they're a big part of fundraising and membership drives, stuff like that, that help support our forecasting and fieldwork operations. Because unfortunately, at the end of the day, we're not fully funded through the forest. And so we work in a partnership to basically provide the product that we do.
Yeah. So many of our aspects of our public lands management, whether it's the timber companies purchasing a timber sale or a wilderness or backcountry area, or even front country partnering with trails organizations to keep trails open, there's a partnership with the avalanche forecasting.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when you look at backcountry recreation, majority of it falls on forest system lands. There is a small percentage on state lands throughout the western states, as well as BLM in certain states. But a majority of it is on the recreations happening on Forest Service land. And as, you know, the primary land manager of those lands, it makes sense that we are a part of the forest. And
there's a new director of the Friends Group, Jill. We had hoped to have her on today, but unfortunately she's not feeling well. So we'll try to get her back on the air sometime in the next few weeks. And that's an exciting opportunity. It sounds like the Friends Group is evolving as well.
Exactly. And as the forecasting operation expands, grows, increases in days. Remember, last year was the first year we were able to pull off 5 forecast days a week. We're going to continue that this year. But as the operation grows, so does the Friends need to grow. And for a long time, they've basically been a volunteer working board and have reached the point to where they need someone to sort of, you know, herd the cats, as we joke about, and keep things organized, keep the snowball moving down the hill and helping grow as well.
So you've touched on where we want to talk about next. There's the work of doing the forecast, and we want to get into the nitty-gritty of that, how it's done, how you can figure out what's happening out there. So the combination of human and technology. And then there's the forecast, what you do with it, how you get it out to the public, who the users are and what the methods are. And so there's a whole gamut of things there. Let's start with how you gather the data. How do you know what's going on?
Yeah, it really starts with watching every flake that falls in the fall time. Like, it's really important for us to track these early layers because it really sets the stage for the rest of the season. And so it's us fighting through the low conditions this time of year to get to where the snow is, to start to develop the initial history or the initial chapters of the storybook for the season. But it always starts with a question. It's kind of like the hypothesis testing. You always start with a question, then you ask yourself, well, where do I need to go to find that? And so we develop a field plan and go out there and look for that question and see what, you know, the snowpack tells us. And then at that point we submit observations and then also incorporate that with a slew of remote weather, weather stations. We have a couple new snow cameras where we're tracking snowfall. We get these images sent to an account to us daily. And so we can help fill in data gaps, but it's really a hodgepodge of a lot of information that we have to factor in and ultimately make a decision.
But at the end of the day, or actually probably at the very beginning of the day, there's someone venturing out into the backcountry on snow machine skis that's digging a pit looking at layers. Is that right?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. Simplified in a nutshell.
Yeah. And that's got to be a fun part of the job for some folks, I imagine. That's part of the joy of being an avalanche forecaster.
Absolutely. I mean, we were joking yesterday, we're really lucky that we get to do this and that we get to be in the mountains in quiet, remote places. But ultimately, at the end of the day, like the work we're doing, it's very gratifying because we're doing it for the communities. We're doing it for the public. We're doing it for this overarching public safety.
Yeah. Now, I imagine from just a risk management standpoint, those folks are the Forest Service employees that are going out into the backcountry, not volunteers.
We do go out into the field with volunteers. Okay. There is a sort of a screening and scrutiny process. We can't just take any walking body off the street. You do have to have the appropriate gear, some basic avalanche training, been exposed to going in the backcountry. But yeah, we do take volunteers. But the majority of our partners on any given day, or other Forest Service staff associated with IPAC or our friends group funds, two employees that support us as well too.
Now, what's the geography you're covering, the physical terrain?
Yeah, it's huge. Our basement elevation of our forecast zones is about 4,000 feet. Obviously, in these big winters, if we felt that we needed to lower our forecast message, we could do that in our products. But we start at 4,000 feet and go up to the tops of all the terrain. We forecast for five zones throughout North Idaho and Northwest Montana that encompasses just shy of 2 million acres.
Okay. And what are those zones? What do they look like?
They're all very unique. The Selkirk Mountains obviously has the Seven Sisters zones. It's a big, long range. It can vary a lot from storm to storm in terms of snowfalls from north to south. We have the West Cabinets, which see a ton of precip thanks to Lake Pendere. The Silver Valley in the I-90 corridor doesn't have as high a peaks, but has a ton of vast terrain. It probably sees less annual snowfall than our northern zones, but still receives plenty of snow. And then we have our two Montana areas, the Purcells and the East Cabinets, which we don't make it to as much. Therefore, we just issued general snowpack updates throughout the winter for those zones. The east cabinets are the highest peaks, the most remote wilderness area. So it's a pretty magical place to be able to mm-hmm. spend time in the winter, for sure.
And the folks that are interested in that, describe the clients, if you will.
The clients of the forecast product?
Well, yeah. Who's likely to pay attention?
I mean, really, anyone who plans to travel on snow-covered slopes in the winter should, in my opinion, know something about avalanches and carry the gear. Mm-hmm. It doesn't take a huge climatic avalanche to get into trouble. I mean, cut banks on a road on the wrong day, walking mm-hmm. up on your snowshoes to the bottom of the slope. I've seen it bury people.
So we're looking at the gamut of snowshoers, backcountry skiers, snowmobilers.
Yeah, yeah. Anyone that likes to get out in the winter, whether it's motorized, human powered, just out for a hike, just out, mm-hmm. Walking your dog. I mean, if you get into steep enough terrain and there's, enough snow on the slope, I mean, you should be aware of avalanches, yeah. in my opinion.
Do we have any roadways that are major concerns for avalanches? It seems like I don't see as many warning signs here about avalanches on highways as I might in Colorado.
No, it's a much different highway climate here in North Idaho than other states in the Rockies, for sure.
So you've gone out and your partners have gone out and dug pits in the morning and you've stress test the layers and collected stuff from the weather data. Putting all that together in a forecast, then what happens? You mentioned it goes out 5 days a week. How does it go out?
Yeah, so we have two forecasters on each morning. One usually starts their day anywhere between 3:30 and 4. They put together a weather synopsis that kind of just looks at the big picture region. As we always say that, if you blow your weather forecast, you're likely going to blow your avalanche forecast. So it's really important for us to have a grasp of the weather and put out a good message, because the weather ultimately dictates the problems and the hazard for the day. We have a forecast call around 5:30 in the morning, usually lasts about 30 minutes. At minimum, it's the two forecasters on for that day, but any of our staff that wants to be a part of the conversation can join in. We do it through video. And we just kind of talk through the problems and talk through the distribution of the danger throughout the zones and come up with a plan, come up with a message. And then at that point, it's really divide and conquer. We put together a radio spot, which you guys are hopefully going to air again this year. And then we write our forecast products. And that can be one product if we feel that all the zones are similar. It could be three products if we feel that there are distinct differences that we need to communicate to the public. That those products typically try to go out by 7:30. And then we put out a more in-depth forecast discussion. It's kind of like the final thing that we put out. And as an industry, we don't know how many people actually use our forecast discussion, but it's where you can really understand the deep thought process of the forecaster for the day. And we usually try to have everything out before 8:00, because then we transition to our field portion of the day and go collect data mm-hmm. for the next forecast.
For the next day. Yeah. So it'll broadcast on the radio, gets posted up on the website.
Yep. We usually put something out on the Friends social media account. Geared towards our bottom line message, and either a video or some photos, from the day prior. Because unfortunately, not unfortunately, but fortunately, a lot of people follow along with our social media feeds and get, important information through that as well.
Yeah, too. That's a good medium. Is there anything similar to the Sheriff's Nixle alert, where you'll get a warning if there's a crash on the bridge or a severe thunderstorm coming in the summer? People who are signed up for the text or emails get that alert on their cell phone.
Yes, so we work collaboratively with the National Weather Service. Both the Spokane and the Missoula offices, since their forecast zones overlap with our avalanche forecasting mm-hmm. terrain. So if we feel that we are going to reach a period of high avalanche danger, We can coordinate with the National Weather Service to issue an avalanche watch, which is cluing in the public that it could happen. It doesn't mean it's a guarantee. And then if we feel that we've met the criteria that we as a forecast team established before a storm based on snowfall, rate, amount of new load, what the weak layer is below, we can issue an avalanche warning. And that's that information is communicated through our website, but also through the National Weather Service homepage. And then it also gets pinged up on your phone. And that's how I check for spell errors and in our products, because you can see it and be like, missed that one.
Oh yeah, it's good feedback though.
Yeah. It's such a crazy year for folks with the Forest Service. How has this year impacted the Avalanche Center?
Yeah, great question. There's been a lot of noise in the system, but surprisingly enough, both IPAC as well as all the avalanche centers in the National Avalanche Program have fared extremely well. Through a lot of hard work, through a lot of partner organizations that support what we do, as well as community voice, the Forest Service has finally given avalanche centers that critical public health and safety designation, which is never a guarantee, but it puts us as a staff and in a funding capacity within the agency at a good spot.
Mm-hmm. A priority
for sure. We were able to hire 2 seasonal forecasters fully funded by the Idaho Panhandle. And these are the first 2 full-time seasonal forecasters funded by the agency in the history of IPAC. So we're extremely excited of the new additions to the team. One of them has been working for several years with our friends group and decided to come on full-time with us. But the additional staffing and reinforcement is going to allow the program to continue the service that we are already giving, the 5 days a week, and hopefully will be the launching pad for us to eventually move to 7 day a week forecasting, which is my ultimate goal here with IPAC.
Such a vital service for anyone who goes outside in the winter, which is a lot of folks. A lot of people come up here for the ability to have year-round access to recreation, and being able to get out in the winter is a really important thing, especially with the days when they get so dark. You've got to get outside to enjoy those hours of daylight.
You do. I mean, the Idaho Panhandle National Forest is really an urban interface forest. I mean, if you look at the people that come and recreate here, we have an extremely large metropolitan complex that people come and recreate here. And I think we have seen that in the avalanche data over the years. As more people have recreated, fatalities have increased. And there was actually, before I got here at IPAC, there was a chunk of time where there were more fatalities over a smaller window than there had been in the previous 10 years. Mm. And so there is a growing and continued need for this program as more people, like you said, want to get out and recreate in, you know, our public lands, which the access here into the mountains is incredible in the wintertime, especially for the motorized users. And so as they go farther, we have to go with them and figure out what's going on below the surface.
Well, if you're just tuning in, this is the KRFY Morning Show, and we're talking with Chris Bilbrey, director of the Idaho Panhandle Avalanche Center. We're going to take a short music break here, listen to a little Fleetwood Mac, come back, and then we're going to ask Chris. We're going to put him on that spot for the long-range winter forecast. We're going to hear whether it's going to be a good year or maybe a not so. But so stay tuned, come back, listen to the long-range forecast and more. Right now, a little Fleetwood Mac. Fleetwood Mac, Landslide. And we are back, KRFY Morning Show, Tuesday. I'm your host, Phil Huff. With us today is Chris Bilbrey from the Idaho Panhandle Avalanche Center. We're talking about IPAC, the work they do, avalanches, and pretty much all things winter. And the inquiring minds want to know, beyond the Farmer's Almanac prediction, beyond NOAA,
You've been up in the hills. You've been looking at the moss on the various sides of the trees. What does it look like?
Yeah, it's still pretty brown down low. Yeah, we're hopeful that I think over Thanksgiving and in the coming weeks, the snow line's going to drop a little bit, but it's up there. You gotta work hard to get it.
Yeah. It's coming, and I haven't really kept track. El Nino, La Nina, I think the various long-range forecasts I've seen over the last couple of months, we're kind of like right on the edge of maybe it's a little more moisture, maybe a little warmer, maybe a little colder, but overall, it just sort of looks average, which isn't necessarily bad.
So you're saying there's a chance?
There's a chance, yeah. Snow's coming, I think.
Yeah, oof.
I put away the lawnmowers last weekend and got the snowblower ready just in case.
Yeah, I mean, my sample size of winter history is pretty small for North Idaho, so I'm still building on that.
Well, it is ever evolving. My wife and I moved here now 24 years ago, and when we first moved here, I've been telling lots of friends about this lately. Every Thanksgiving, we'd be going out to do a snowshoe in the morning, and you know, there'd be a couple feet of snow down at our house, which isn't much above lake level, and now there's, you know, last few years, I can't remember there ever being snow on the ground at Thanksgiving down low. So there's big patterns and other things, but I think that the season's getting, for snow, it's getting later and higher.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a trend we see through a lot of places in the West. And it's hard to you know, especially when we get asked a lot, is it going to be a good winter? Is this going to be a La Nina like 20 years ago? And it's hard to put much emphasis on those types of winters that, you know, 20, 30 years ago, because things are different now. And yeah, long range winter forecasting in the mountains is tough. And you got to remember, it's an average for a reason. You could get it all in 30 days. You could get it all in 6 months. And so it really depends on how you get there. I like it slow and steady throughout the winter versus winter all lumped into 30 days.
Well, the other thing that I will say has been the norm over the last 24 years is that there's no average winter. We've had winters with very little snow where I haven't gotten the snowblower out at all. And there's been winters where the winter before I got the snowblower and the person we had hired to plow the driveway decided he wasn't going to do that any longer. It had been a light snow year, and we thought, well, yes, it's trend. We're just gonna shovel, and we got literally 120 inches of snow in less than 3 weeks, and it was piling up so that I was tossing it above my shoulders on a berm, and it's like, well, this is just crazy. The previous winter there were 3 inches on the ground at that point, so there's high variances, I guess, is what I'm saying, and that makes it hard to predict, and that also those high variances include winters where we have more rain on snow and. That makes the avalanche side of the things all that much more challenging.
Yeah, absolutely. Rain, snow, we're going to get it. Yeah. It's all a temperature game here. And these La Nina winters can be notorious for putting us right on the cusp. And a shift in things, 100 miles, can have a big influence on the winter. Yeah. So.
Well, as we get into the season, there are educational events and outreach events, and this is the part of the program where we'd be talking more in depth with Jill. I think she passed some notes on, but tell us a little bit about that public interface side. What's coming up? What activities are there? In the past, there's been the snow pit chats and some awareness training.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, all of our education opportunities are live and available for registration on the website under our education tab. Yeah, our awareness tour has also started, which is our free 1 hour lectures where it's really the stepping into the kiddie pool of avalanche safety and education. But that tour has started. You can go to our website and find the list of events and locations, towns and locations for those. And then we're really excited to bring back our snow pit chats this year. Mm-hmm. We're going to start those on December 18, I believe, which is a Thursday. Mm-hmm. The first one's going to be here in Sandpoint. I think we're still sorting the deets out on the location there, but we're going to do one a month through March throughout our forecast areas, a different community at each one. And it's going to be a more informal, kind of in-depth, intimate presentation by one of our forecasters about the state of the snowpack, current state of the snowpack, and how things are evolving. 45-minute talk about, you know, what's happened in the previous 30 days with the weather, with the snowpack, avalanches, have we had any incidents, any fatalities, stuff like that. But then just an opportunity for the public to engage with our forecasters, ask whatever burning question they might have in their back pocket, and just a chance for our staff to engage with these communities, but also an opportunity for our friends group to be there and help just sort of build that bridge between the two pieces of our organization and also encourage people to become members of the program and support us that way.
And I saw a notice yesterday, something went out about SantaCon coming up and Meet the Avalanche Dogs. Is connection there with you guys?
That's probably mostly a Schweitzer thing.
Yeah, they do their avalanche dogs. How do you all work with Schweitzer? Tell us a little more about that.
Yeah, they're great at communicating weather and sort of snowpack stuff within their snow safety operation with us internally. Obviously, we don't communicate that out into the public, but we use it for good internal information gathering, especially early season when a lot of their terrain is very similar to the wild snowpack we have in the backcountry. They're great at, anytime we're up there and we're going out towards Blue or towards Keokie, you know, they're great just having conversations about what they've seen and number of people that are heading out there. And so they're always super supportive with us. We have access to their weather station, which helps give us, you know, excellent, you know, higher elevation information to factor into our forecast. And anytime that we can piggyback off the avalanche dogs, everyone loves the Avy dogs.
Yeah. So. Everybody loves the Avy dogs. Yeah.
But we don't have an avalanche dog program with the Avalanche Center. No.
So volunteers, we've touched briefly a couple times on volunteers. Tell us more about how someone who's listening going, wow, I'd like to get involved with this effort. How can they volunteer? Who should they see? What can they do?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of ways that people could volunteer and be a part of our organization. Whether that's wanting to get out in the snow with us or volunteer in an event, help plan an event, just be a part of any of our fundraising efforts. As the program grows and as the Friends grows, there's likely going to be an interest and a need for expanding our board members and bringing in folks that have really unique skill sets that could maybe help take the program to that next level and be a part of that next growth and change. So there's a ton of opportunities to volunteer with our organization. I would say the best way is to just send an email to the info@idahopanhandleavalanche.org. And Jill and I monitor that email. And so we can put the right person in contact with the right individual within our program.
All right. Very good.
Yeah.
Well, as we're coming close to the end of the interview, other ways that individuals can support the effort?
Yeah. Our memberships are a huge funding component of our avalanche forecasting program. And so if you're not a member and want to be a member of IPAC, you can do that through becoming a member on our website. We rely a lot on our, you know, business sponsors contributing money and supporting us in those ways. And we have local companies that donate gear to support our operations and our education team. So there's a lot of ways that people can contribute, be involved with our program. and help promote avalanche safety and education throughout really the entire Inland Northwest, not just local here to Sandpoint. Like, our overarching outreach is a big community.
Yeah, there's a lot of folks who can use the information who come up from a lot of people coming up from the Spokane area to winter recreate here.
Yeah, we sent out our annual survey from last year, just asking the public for their feedback on how we communicate the information through our forecast products. And I'm pleased to say that we have a couple followers from north of the border in Canada. So we're an international avalanche center now.
International avalanche center. There you go. Good reason to go up to Creston.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Chris, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for joining us this morning on The Morning Show. We'll have Jill back on sometime, or have her on sometime the coming few weeks. If you've just tuned in, this morning's topic has been all things related to the Idaho Panhandle Avalanche Center. As always, you can listen to this as a podcast later on at krfy.org. We're going to go out with a little bit of Todd Snyder. Thank you again, Chris.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Stay tuned, and I'll be back with some upcoming events.